Monday, October 23rd. You're listening to Mountain Money here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley here with Doug Wells. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
Looks beautiful out there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, another beautiful weekend for us.
Mm-hmm. It was a great time. Went to the Real Salt Lake game yesterday.
And I heard they won, but unfortunately they're not going to go to the playoffs.
Yes, it was the big decision day for Major League Soccer, and it depended on a bunch of different dominoes falling exactly the way they needed to, and unfortunately they didn't, so it was the end of Real Salt Lake in their season, but it was a fun game.
Excellent.
We've got a great show coming up this hour. We're going to start the hour with author Claudia Chan. She wrote the book This Is How We Rise. It addresses one of the most urgent issues of our time, that's gender equality, on both a personal and societal level. That'll be really interesting to talk with her. One reviewer says Chan offers real advice on how to realize your potential, maximize your talents, and make meaningful change in the world. We look forward to hearing more from Claudia Chan.
That'll be a great conversation. Our second guest is going to be Justin Hunter and Michelle Larson. They just opened up a new business in town. It's an unusual business. I think most folks have heard of a float tank, but many of us probably have never visited a float tank. There's supposed to be lots of physical and mental benefits to that, and we're going to hear more from them about float tanks, what they are, and why people should consider using them. And then our final guest is going to be Merrill Vander Merle. And she is the founder of a business called Joffles. We've had Merrill on as a guest in the past. We're kind of watching her and her business grow. It's been pretty exciting, and she's got some nice updates for us. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Matt Mitten, attorney with Jones Waldo, a Park City law firm. Longtime supporters of KPCW, our firm provides estate planning and other personal legal services to residents of Summit County and beyond. We are online at joneswaldo.com and 435-200-0085.
Whitney Wall here from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise recently committed to a net zero footprint by 2030. The environment is our business. By 2030, we commit to zero net emissions, zero waste to the landfill, and a zero net operating impact to forests and habitat. More information at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host, Doug Wells. We've got a great guest to start our hour, Claudia Chan, the author of This Is How We Rise. She writes about how to reach your highest potential, empower women, and lead change in the world. She addresses issues like how to breed leaders that embrace gender equality, shifting from a me mindset to me to we. Ms. Chan joins us on the phone right now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to start the interview with one of the stories that really struck me in your book. You were leading what you called the ultimate success story, running a business. I think it was called Shecky's. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yep.
Shecky's, which kind of embraced the Sex and the City lifestyle, the looking good, the wearing the great brands, the drinking the cosmopolitans. Yet you said you were deeply unhappy. Why?
Well, you know, I was about 25 years old, actually. I ran that company when I was 25 to 35, and I'm 42 now. But I say in the book how, you know, often we, you sort of charge through life, right? And in a way, sort of, you're in a reactionary manner. But I was raised in this Chinese, my parents, Chinese immigrants, surviving China's war, and, you know, really just grew up with money and, you know, survival and, you know, and all of those things were just so important. And so at Shecky's, I built this multi-million-dollar business by the time I was 29 years old. And into my 30s, I felt like I just had achieved this material success because it was all, you know, I had to make money, I had to survive. And so much of the value was placed on that because of what my parents had gone through growing up in China. And so, but I felt like I lacked a purpose. You know, I was on TV all the time, but a nice wardrobe. On paper, I looked very successful, but deep down inside, I lacked purpose and a greater meaning to my life. And at a certain point, the material stuff just wasn't fulfilling. And B, my business partner and I also increasingly had different views and visions for where the company should go. And our relationship became very unhealthy, and we argued a lot. So I just didn't even like who I was becoming. And so, again, this is where a lot of us just sort of charge through life, you know, based on how we grew up and based on our notions of what, you know, was important. And then we find ourselves in this unhappy place. So this is where I believe it all happens for you to sort of give you a wake-up call as to, you know, maybe your past should now change to something different.
Claudia,
that's generally what happens.
Claudia, one of the main themes of your book is the importance of finding purpose and how we make that work, how we find it, and then how we monetize that, for lack of a better term, so that we can make a living doing what we're passionate about. I'm curious, one of your purposes is helping women succeed, helping women find their purpose. But the themes in your book apply both to men and to women, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you think the process of finding purpose is materially different for men and for women?
I do not. And actually, it's interesting because I believe that we're in the fourth wave of feminism, and I can talk about that in a little bit, but in terms of gender equality, right? Like, we're 170 years to gender equality, and traditionally, over the years, the movement has really been speaking to women. Hey, women, we need to empower women. And it's been a one-way dialogue. So I actually wrote the book to address women and men. So this is how we rise for women and men. And it's to actually get all of them thinking about how can I realize my purpose in life and also lift women, because, you know, and care about gender equality, because the world is made up of half women and half men, and it's humanity, and we have to, you know, so that's just one thing I wanted to clarify. It's for women and men. And I do feel that it's really the same thing. I believe that we're all here for a period of time. Let's say you live 90 years, we're lucky enough to live that long. I believe that we're here for a bigger reason and your whole life, everything you go through is to bring you closer to what that purpose is. And once you sort of realize it, whether it happens at 25, 35, 45, 55, you know, I want to inspire people to find it as soon as possible. So the remaining time of your life on this earth is really that it is so much more fulfilling, because when we do know our purpose and we know what we're aiming for, we realize the extraordinary success and potential that our birthright is to have and be.
But you came to this self-realization after you had been materially successful. For someone who has to struggle to pay the rent or pay the mortgage or pay the grocery bills, it's kind of harder, isn't it, to be self-actualized? How does someone do that when they're just struggling with the day-to-day?
So actually, in the book, I define purpose as holistic purpose. And I think that actually, I mean, if you watch Oprah, right, and so many of the self-help books out there talk about purpose. It's a term that's been around for so long, but sometimes it stresses people out and it makes them feel like failures because they're confused because people feel that they have multiple purposes, right? Like their kids and, you know, their families, and there's so many things to focus on when it comes to purpose. So I actually think I actually define it as holistic purpose, and I ask you to define what is your purpose in the personal realm and the social realm. So personal realm is, For example, I have a 2-year-old and an 8-month-old, right? So, of course, my purpose is to raise amazing kids and healthy, happy kids. It's my marriage, my partner, you know, my husband, and make sure that we have a good life. Like, we're good so that our family and our careers and our impact, our social impact is good. It's my health. It's our financial well-being. That's all the purpose stuff. And I think for a lot of people, that's easier to figure out. But it's interesting when you get really clear on it. Let's just say that you are a musician and you love music, and that's part of, you know, to really make sure that you're you know, venturing, you know, in that hobby. So, you know, I ask people to really get clear on, write down the things that you care about from a personal realm standpoint. But what is it in the social realm? I think that's where we often, you know, forget that we all share this world with other human beings, and we all are also meant to be here. Again, if we live 90 years, that we're also meant to contribute to society in some way. And so, you know, if you were, for example, raised by a single mom, you know, or you've been sexually discriminated against, or you have stuff, you know, you beat cancer, or like something, you know, I always say start where you struggle, start where you know, you might have had a painful experience, because maybe that happened for you. So then, because chances are, if you experience it, so many other people are out there experiencing that same problem. So try to get clear on what is your purpose in the social realm. And so really, once we start writing these things down and say, wow, these are all the things that I care about, you know, like in my life, this 90 years of life that I have, I care about, you know, raising, at the end of your life, you know, when looking back, you know, what impact did you make, right? Other than having a great life and having raised great kids. But, you know, I also help young girls with their confidence. I also, you know, helped close the pay gap. I also, you know, empowered, like underserved, you know, children or whatever it is that, you know, was meaningful to you, right? And you help them in the way that's specific in the skills that you have. So that's what I mean. And I think whether or not you're somebody who does not have much and you're making ends meet, right? If you're in that situation, I feel that the sooner you get clear on those specific things that you're aiming for, the sooner you'll actually achieve the money and the success in order to serve those things. I think life and karma has a funny way of acting, but when we're driven by that service and that purpose alignment, things just, money does start coming. You know, you get that job or somebody starts helping you out. So I think whether or not you are low income or middle income or higher income, I think that we all need to see the bullseye so that we can hit the bullseye.
Yeah,
the sooner that you get that purpose, you will realize success.
Life in, and karma do have a way of happening to us, and sometimes
Absolutely.
The signals that we get are positive and we do more of it, and sometimes the signals we get are negative, and maybe that's a sign that, you know, we should be looking in other places. You were just talking about struggles. We all have struggles in life. Some of them are just based on our journey, but unfortunately, some of them are systemic. And I want to go back to a comment that you said earlier. We're 170 years away from gender equality. That's actually a statistic from the World Economic Forum. I think a lot of people are shocked at that. I think people think we're closer to this gender equality than the statistics tell us. And I know that's a global statistic. And if you think of some of the countries in the Middle East and places like that, clearly there's more distance to go. My question is, it seems in my mother's generation, there was a lot of progress made in the United States on the types of opportunities that opened up to women. In my lifetime, in my sister's lifetime, it doesn't seem like there's been as much progress from my vantage point. Do you think that's accurate, or do you think we've made more progress than maybe it feels to me like we have in the last 50 years?
I think that it's funny because I don't know if you've ever watched Mad Men, but it's, you know, it's a show on AMC that's been around forever. And, you know, when you watch a show like that, you know, talks about the advertising industry, which is, you know, 50s and 60s. It's crazy how that was only, you know, that was only 60 years ago. It was only 50 to 60 years ago where, you know, women had to get in line, you know, like secretaries. Women could only have jobs as secretaries if you had a job, and you actually had to get in line and let the men eat first before women could eat. And it's just crazy to think that, you know, and women got the right to vote in America in 1920. So we haven't even actually had the right to vote for 100 years yet. So, yeah, it's really easy to forget because there's so many successful women, and women are equal breadwinners or primary breadwinners in many households, that it's hard to believe that we're so far from it. I think that, you know, progress has been incredibly, incredibly slow. And if you even look at the corporate workplace, and, you know, out of all the Fortune 500 CEOs, 6% of them are women. And the pay gap, we're still at pay parity. Women make 79 cents to the man's dollar. And I think a lot of the reason why progress has been so slow is because, in a way, America hasn't really cared about it that much on a mainstream level. So, you know, I say that, you know, the first movement was, you know, women getting the right to vote. The second one was, you know, the Glorious Silence. Betty Friedan wrote The Feminine Mystique. You know, there was that was that period. And then, of course, there was, like, the era of, like, the Riot Girls and the Vagina Monologues. But, again, like, feminism was always radical, or it was, like, oh, those extreme bra-burning women, you know, fighting for equality and women's rights. And so today, I believe that we're finally in the mainstream, a mainstream period for gender equality and women's empowerment, because it's all part of advertisers now, you know, do women's empowerment and girl power campaigns. And corporations now are prioritizing their women's issues and women's initiatives. And celebrities now, like Beyonce, right, like saying that she's a feminist on at her concert shows, and male celebrities saying that they're feminists. And, you know, now, of course, we're living the Harvey Weinstein Me Too trending. But, like, every few months, it always feels like there's something major that's happening in the news, whether it's like Uber CEO steps down because of a sexual harassment case that wasn't addressed. So I think that, you know, right now we're in a time in a society where feminism and women's empowerment actually feels mainstream. It actually feels like everybody should care about it. And even the Women's March, 5 million women around the world marched, you know, earlier this year. And so, and men, women, like all people marched, right? So I think that now we are in, like, everybody sort of cares about it. And even if you don't care about it, it's in your face, or it's on the news, or it's in magazines that you're reading. So now I believe is a time where it can accelerate, because we need everybody, all hands on deck, in order for us to actually get there faster. And there's something I teach that it's not just one movement, it's a macro movement, the women's movement. So because there's thousands of women's issues, right? If you look at even, you know, getting more girls and women into STEM jobs, because the future is, like, thinking by the year 2020, like 1.7 million jobs are going to be, I believe that's the number, you know, that are computer science related. So it's almost like an economic prosperity issue. Like, we got to get more girls and women into tech jobs and computer science related fields, because that's where all the, and yet, like, I think it's like 4% of girls actually major in it so many girls drop out. So anyway, my point is that's just one movement. And, you know, the corporate leadership gap is another movement, or, you know, the sexual harassment, you know, issues is another movement. So I believe that there's all these movements now are coming to the forefront, and people are starting to care about them. So I do believe now is the greatest opportunity for an acceleration to happen. But yes, prior to now, progress has been incredibly slow.
How do we get to that point, Claudia, though, where women are not judged superficially? And sometimes I believe women get in their own way. We feel like our hair has to look a certain way, our makeup has to be a certain way, our body type needs to be a certain way. It's all of these messages being pounded into our heads by Madison Avenue. And I think to a certain extent, everybody is susceptible to it. You know, why are we celebrating the Kardashians and how people look versus the women who succeed in the STEM education? What is it going to take for our society to finally look at Madison Avenue and say, those messages don't work anymore, and we're not buying it?
I know, it's amazing, too, right? When you flip open a Vogue or Elle magazine, and it's like for the first 20 pages, it's like all these beautiful women that are thick thin, you know, wearing handbags. And yeah, I think why we're here, so much of it is because of media. Right. And we can only be what we see. And so over time, I mean, I'm a Gen Xer. And so whether you're a baby boomer or, you know, depending on the generation you're in, I mean, media has always portrayed women, hey, your value is based on how you look and how beautiful you are and how skinny you are and all these things. And if you look at movies or television shows. And so I think that what teaches you, right, it's your parents. Like, you know, when you come into life, it's your parents, it's your school, it's your job, and it's media. So I think we need to, A, be really conscious as consumers of media, to be very picky about, you know, you almost have to just be very proactive and self-aware that, wow, media, everything that I read actually, like, affects my consciousness and my belief system. It's a source that is advertising to us and telling us what our worth is, right? So we need to be very, very conscious of that, which is why a show like yours is so great, because you're talking about something that's meaningful and that's empowering. But secondly, media itself, of course, also has to do a better job. And you know, you take now, I believe that media actually is doing a much better job on driving awareness to things like the Uber case, right? Or sexual harassment on Silicon Valley, or the, you know, the Me Too stuff. And but a lot of that is also dictated by social media and what's trending. And so anyway, I think that our relationship with media really needs to be thought out properly. We need to be very intentional about our relationship with media. The second thing is, it's also just, you know, we need to be teaching our young girls and women, and even in the workplace, you know, that your confidence and your image of yourself needs to be rooted in something that you are intentional about, and that your beauty and your worth, like I believe that your birthright is to be extraordinary and that you are extraordinary, every single person on the planet. And we need to celebrate who we are and what we look like and our the color of our skin to the size of our pants. And, you know, and I think that we just need to teach people to, you know, want women that, you know, your value comes from inside yourself, and to really be driven by that inner internal, to really manage your internal thoughts and know what your culprits are. I talk a lot about in the book is, you know, when it comes to your confidence, is to know what your core limiting beliefs are about yourself. So if you believe that, oh my gosh, I'm always horrible when it comes to this, or there you go again, Claudia, you know, X, Y, Z. We all have like those few core limiting beliefs. So I think second thing is really getting clear around, you know, what are the negative statements that you're saying about yourself, and combat those statements by crossing those sentences out and writing the affirmative. And so when we can live this life where we're really aware of our own thoughts and our beliefs about ourselves, and how to and proactively shift those beliefs into positive statements. So it's internal self-talk management and monitoring. It's, you know, managing media and all the sources that are coming at you. You really need to almost have a strategic personal plan about managing your thoughts, right, and your actions.
Claudia,
so
let me,
if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Let me
unpack some of that. First, I love your statement about it's our birthright for each of us to be extraordinary. I think that's very motivating, and I think that's true. If we believe it internally, and that's the key, and that's my question. You know, there's multiple studies that show here in the U.S. And I'm the father of two daughters, and they're teenage girls now. But this is, and my wife's a professional as well. So this is a cause that's I'm passionate about as well, and I try to do what I can in my little way to have this dialogue take place more and see more progress being made. My question is, there's multiple studies that show that girls and boys have a similar view of themselves, a similar self-worth up until about puberty. And then that changes. And my question is, you know, absent media, if you look at countries where they don't, where they're not inundated with magazines and the internet and television, do we see that as well? Or is that something that clearly media and society is making happen?
Sorry, I just want to clarify your question. Is that because you mentioned areas where they are not exposed to media?
Yeah. So, what are we seeing in areas if you take away the media, and probably a fourth of the world's population, a third of the world's population does not have access to television, access to magazines. What are we seeing in those cultures? Do we still see that change in self-worth taking place absent that media, absent some of those external forces?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have research on that, but my assumption would be absolutely, because you just have less. You know, I think media in a way is, it's like subconscious brainwashing, right? It's like somebody's really telling you, hey, wear these jeans and be this size, and women should be XYZ, and boys should be XYZ, and, you know, media in many ways, whether it's movies, television shows, or magazines, or what you're reading. And social media, of course, and because all of us are, of course, everybody's putting up the most perfect-looking, you know, photo-edited photos of ourselves up there about how perfect our families are, or how great, you know, a man or a woman, you know, so a lot of that is subconscious. So we're essentially being, you know, marketed and brainwashed by what is important and what is cool and what is, you know, the good thing to have. And so I have to assume that, you know, those kids that are being raised in a more peaceful environment where you're not being marketed all these messages and brainwashed by what's valuable and what's not, what's beautiful and what's not, that they're just growing up healthier and less less affected by all of that. And then I think it's really, of course, then, you know, what's really shaping you is your parents and the community and the school that you're in. Obviously, if you're in a household where you have a, you know, a typical breadwinner husband and a stay-at-home housewife, then, of course, you know, you might be, you know, hitting 20 and being 25 years old and being like, okay, I'm ready. Maybe you're like ready to meet your breadwinner husband because also mom did this and dad did that. So I think we also just need to be very, you know, I think fundamentally as any parent out there who is raising children, we are really shaping the next generation of humanity, right? We're shaping the quality of human beings in society and what, you know, and gender norms, I believe, have really changed a lot. And what is masculine and what is feminine. And I think that instead of saying, oh, boys do this, boys wear blue, and hey, girls wear pink, and girls look pretty, and guys go out and make money, you know, or whatever those stereotypes are, I think we need to now really, and you know, we had Dr. Shefali, a parenting expert at She Summit, my conference last week, and I just, you know, read a lot on this subject, but I believe that instead of saying, oh, this is very boy and this is very girl, we should say, you know, these are feminine traits. There's feminine traits and there's masculine traits. And feminine traits can be like being vulnerable or transparent or empathetic. And masculine traits. And instead of saying, you know, oh, as we're raising our kids, being aware that, oh, you know, maybe 70% of my son has more traditional masculine traits, like the fact that he wants to just jump and stomp on everything that there is because they're just so much more physical. But, you know, 25% of him is very feminine, you know, like he has feminine traits. And just to really allow our children to be raised and to become naturally who they're meant to be. Like, I believe that I'm probably 40% masculine traits and 60% feminine traits, just given how assertive I am in business or just assertive in general. And so I think that we just need to, like, we're all mixes of various traits, and we should all, if anything, just recognize what traits our children have and allow them to be what God created them to be, you know, and let them be out there in the world and not necessarily label them, you know, this specific gender stereotype, because I think that's what's been getting us into trouble.
All right. Well, that's a great note for us to end on. We're all a various mix, but we can celebrate that mix and we can embrace it and be the best version of ourselves possible. Our guest this morning has been Claudia Chan. She is the author of This Is How We Rise, Reach Your Highest Potential, Empower Women, and Lead Change in the World. Claudia, thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, such an honor and an amazing conversation. Thank you.
And you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch Counties.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Interesting conversation with Claudia Chan, author of This Is How We Rise. We're going to switch gears now. We have Justin Hunter and Michelle Larson in the studio with us. They opened up a new business called Park City Sink Float. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Doug.
So I mentioned in the teaser at the top of the show that many of us have heard of float tanks, mm-hmm. But probably very few people have tried them. Tell us why people should consider using a float tank.
You know, in today's world, we're constantly being stimulated, and flotation gives us an opportunity to get away from all of the stimulation, all of the distractions, and reset, calm the nervous system, relax the muscles, and be able to gear up for our day-to-day tasks.
How is it different from taking a bubble bath at home?
So a bubble bath at home, the ratio is going to be very different. Way more water, way less salt. So a float tank is only 10 inches of water, but it's 900 pounds of Epsom salt. It's enough salt to actually physically hold you on the surface of the water, so you completely float, removing all pressure from bones, joints, anything like that. So in a bath, and oftentimes in a bath too, especially if you're tall, you can't fully relax. Float pods are 7 feet long, so you can completely stretch out and just float on the surface of the water.
And you say it's a pod, so are you completely enclosed in something?
You have an option. So the pod itself, the style that we have at our center, is about the size of a queen-size bed. It has a hatch-style lid, so you can have the lid open or closed. Ideally, the lid is closed because you're trying to create an environment that's the same temperature as your skin, as your body. So the water and the air are the same temperature as your skin. Ideally, there's no light, there's no sound, so there's absolutely no sensory input. Now, you're completely in control of all of those things. So if you are like, I'm not sure about this whole lid thing, you can leave the lid open. If you want lights on, you can have lights. If you want music on, you can have music. So there's some room to play with those aspects of it.
And can you bring your own music in?
Yeah, we have an audio jack right in the room. So if you wanted to plug in your own music, a guided meditation, et cetera, you could. There are athletes that pipe in, like Tom Brady pipes in stadium sound into his so that he can get into a focused state with that sort of distraction kind of common in his day-to-day life.
And how long are you floating?
Generally 60 minutes is a good place to start, and then as you get better at doing nothing, you can extend it from there.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the opposite direction. I thought you were going to say you can reach that zen state with practice after 30 minutes.
That's also true, but there is some benefit of being in there for a longer amount of time. All that Epsom salt, it's going to absorb transdermally. It'll absorb through your skin. And magnesium is really important for a bunch of different functions in the body, over 300 chemical processes. It's a smooth muscle relaxant, so it's going to push out all the lactic acid in your muscles if you've been working out or doing anything like that. So it's going to be a really healing thing. So you do want some time in there to absorb the magnesium.
So are most of your visitors to date people that have done float tanks somewhere else, or are they people completely new to float tanking?
Almost exclusively first floaters for us so far.
And 60 minutes, I was actually thinking you were going to say it was like 10 minutes or something like that. I'm surprised it's that long. To me, it seems like that the lacking the sensory input would make it feel even longer. Like, gee, I've been in here 12 hours. Do you get that? Or I've never done a float tank, so I'm just guessing.
It can feel like a very long time. You get better at it, and there are benefits. The longer you stay in there, and the deeper it goes. They've done some studies that show that in order for the brain to produce theta brain waves, which is the same waves that are produced when we're in our flow state, it takes between 25 and 40 minutes. So once you get good at it, you can get into that zone and then have a significant amount of time there, which is a great space for creativity.
I was going to go there. So it sounds like the goal is to get people into the term you used was your flow state.
Yeah.
Outside of a float tank, just so we can think about, so we're on common ground, what flow state is. When would people normally get into their flow state if they're not using a flow tank?
Yeah, the flow state is that position where you just feel like everything is rolling. For for writers, it's when they sit down to write and 2 hours go by and they've produced something very, very creative and unique. For athletes, for a snowboarder, it's when they're on the mountain and they're so in touch with what they're doing that they feel one with the mountain, and there's no distractions. They're right there in the moment. And so there's actually a pretty high correlation with the frequency with which you get into the flow state and how happy you are as a human being.
I'm curious. So I taught myself how to computer program over the last 2 years, and that's a really important component for coders, is getting at what they would call getting into the zone. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a lot of technology-related people grabbing onto this and saying this is an important part of my process now? Is there a niche with the technical community in this town?
We haven't seen that. Although it would certainly be great for that demographic. We've seen local business owners, so like leaders in the community. We've seen a lot of athletes, but no one from that demographic yet.
How young can you go to be in a float tank? I'm sure there's a lot of parents who think their kids are overstimulated. Would this help?
So we have to work within some confines. With the Utah state laws as they are right now, were anyone to sign a waiver for their child and let their child in, if that child did do have a slip and fall or something like that, the waiver would be completely, it would not protect us at all in court. Oh. So we are definitely, that's something we want to work towards, because flotation therapy is super important for healing for anyone who has a concussion. And obviously with our community of athletes, that would be a great demographic for us to be able to serve. So we want to get there, but we're not there yet.
Let's talk about your background. How did you guys get in the float business?
I think we're both pretty wellness-minded. We met at Whole Foods. I was the whole body team leader of the Park City store up until just a few weeks ago. I basically helped close the new store and then opened my own business with Justin. And Justin was my assistant there for some time and then went and ran the grocery and whole body teams at the Draper store. I have a degree in nutrition.
My degree is in health education.
So it's just, it's a natural fit for us. Like, it just feels like a service to provide to our community for a different take on stuff that we're already interested in, which is the healing component and then the mental health component.
And is this a franchise, or if not, how did you guys learn the basics of what you need to do to open a business like this?
There are franchises. There are people that do franchise, but we are just the two of us. So I think Whole Foods provided us a lot of education in terms of how to run a day-to-day business. Being team leaders, we were basically given a lot of free rein on how to do certain things and what expectations were, so that helped us a lot. And then, you know, we're two young kids. We got some investors, and our investors have been incredibly helpful and kind and supportive in helping us along the way learn what we need to learn. So
let's talk about some logistics. Where are you located?
Just at the junction between 248 and 40. So instead of taking exit 4 off 40 to come into Park City, you would head toward Camas. And we're just basically one mile off that road. So about 10 minutes from the studio here.
And how much does it cost to do a session? And do you do discounts for group sessions? Group sessions sounds funny. I mean,
yes,
multiple
though. Yes,
sessions.
Yes, we do. That's actually our most popular package right now is, for the month of October, we're running something called an introductory float with a friend. You don't physically float with your friend, but the two of you come at the same time. It's $50 for each of you. You could add a third person. We have three rooms. So you all three could come together. You would each pay $50 for your hour. And the appointment itself is an hour and a half. So you've got 15 minutes on either end to shower before and after, get dressed. We've got all the toiletries that you would need. You don't need a bathing suit. Everything is in your private room. So you basically just come as you are, and we provide everything that you would need to be able to go back into your life afterwards.
And I'm going to ask for all the germaphobes out there, how do you quell their concerns?
So the Dead Sea is called the Dead Sea for a reason, right? There's such a high mineral content, such a high salt content that nothing can survive in there. Our salt pods are the same. There's a lot of salt to the point that it inhibits microbial growth. In addition, anytime anyone is not in the pod, the water is being constantly treated with both UV light and ozone. And there's also several filters in there, including a 5-micron filter, so which is microscopic. Anything bigger than that will not make it through the filter. So very, very clean environment.
So the two of you were working together at Whole Foods. How did the idea of float tanks come to the, pardon the pun, come to the surface?
We knew about float tanks, and it was an idea that we loved and we wanted to try, but it wasn't until I had a reason to try it. There's a time in my life where a lot of things crashed down on me at once, and I was very stressed out, and I wasn't handling it well. And so I was just looking for anything, just reaching for something to be able to help me to think clearly. And so I tried floating, and it was a game changer for me. And then after that, I noticed the benefit of I had a headache for 10 years every single day. And floating was something that would actually relieve that headache for me. And so as soon as I saw those two benefits, I was instantly hooked.
So living here in Park City and working at Whole Foods, before you guys opened up the float tanks, there were none. And it sounds like float tanks have made a big difference in your life. Where did you float when you were here?
We were driving to Ogden.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That's
it. Yeah, it was worth the hour.
Is that the closest one? There's not one in Salt Lake City?
There is one in Salt Lake City. There's actually one, a single unit pod in a wellness center here in Park City as well that existed. They opened just before we did. So there are a few other options available.
Who figured this out? What's the genesis of the float pod?
It was developed in the 50s by a gentleman who was interested in figuring out what happened when your brain had nothing to do. So what would happen, you know, tree falls in the woods sort of scenario. If there is nothing for me to process, what do I do? And that is also a lot of reason people come to us. Like, no sensory input, no light, no sound, no temperature gradient. My body doesn't have to figure out which way is up, doesn't have to do anything. What will happen? And people are intrigued by that, and then they get out there, and they're like, oh, wait, I'm going to do this for an hour. So there's a lot of times of first float apprehension, and then they, you know, dip their toe in there, and they're like, oh, wait, this feels amazing. And I'm in control of it, so... We've had, so far, everyone besides one person has loved it. And we think that's a pretty good track record.
It seems like 20 years ago I heard about float tanks a lot. And then they kind of went away.
That's true.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that they had that popularity and then they've gone away? And obviously you're betting on the popularity comes back.
I think it was an aspect of technology. I mean, we've already discussed the hygienic aspect of it, and float pods have come a long way since then. So as people were starting to become a little bit more aware of disease and things being like that being spread, they were like, oh, this is scary. And now a lot more information has come out about how we actually do maintain the health of these things, and the technology of the pod itself has come a long way. It's basically a giant saltwater computer. They're really quite remarkable machines.
In cold and flu season, is there a health benefit for going? Is there anything that a doctor would say, hey, to help you with your bronchitis?
We just had a gentleman with bronchitis out the other day, and the float rooms are quite humid, so that's really healing, especially for our environment, how dry it is here, really healing for those dry, raspy lungs. So I listened to him cough for a little while when he first got in there, and then one cough at the end, and that was it. So,
not to mention that when we're stressed, our immune system is on hyperdrive, and it can't really be regulated very well. So by being able to lower our stress hormones, the immune system is better able to react appropriately, and it can better handle illnesses.
Well, we need to wrap up, but before we let you go, you've shared with us where your location is. Go ahead and share if you have a website and also a phone number so people can get a hold of you.
Sure. Our website is syncfloat.com. Sync is spelled S-Y-N-C. So syncfloat.com. Phone number 435-333-7962. And we also just wanted to extend an invite to everyone. We're having our grand opening party this Thursday, the 26th, from 6 to 8 p.m. It's ourselves, a really lovely salon next door called Lit Park East, and then an auto detailer called Summit Auto Detailing. It'll be the three of us, food trucks, Park City Brewery, all sorts of stuff. So we'd love to have you out.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. What are the hours for the open house?
It's this Thursday, the 26th, from 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday. Okay, well, our guests have been Justin Hunter and Michelle Larson. Good luck to both of you on your new business.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits, from business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Interesting conversation with Justin Hunter and Michelle Larson. They are the proprietors at Park City Sync Float. Don't forget, they're doing an open house this Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. In studio with us now is Meryl Merva. She is the founder of Jaffles. Meryl, we've first off, welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Meryl, we've had you on a couple times. It's been fun to watch your company grow as we hear your story. You continue to expand. I think last time we talked to you, You had business was thriving both here and also in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
And now you're expanding nationwide. Tell us about that.
The launch of our USDA was roughly 2 years ago, so that was a big milestone in itself, having got some seed money investment from my partner for originally a brick-and-mortar model. So the USDA certification launched us into food service for 2016, which was university colleges, hotel casinos, Las Vegas. So that's all continued on. But 2017 is really the exciting part for us, which has been our launch of retail. So what we did was we retained a sales team that has a national ecosystem. It's not really a broker, it's really a sales team that has relationships directly with the buyers in the frozen category since we've launched a frozen product. Essentially have those relationships with the major retailers like HEB and Kroger and Giant Eagle. And so we've managed to not only launch in Utah everywhere, but we've started shipping to these national accounts and closing accounts as well. So 2018 is going to be, the first quarter of 2018 will be huge for us.
Let's back up and tell our listeners what Jaffles is.
Sure. So Jaffles is the brand name that we created around the original sandwich or pocket sandwich called a Jaffle, which I grew up on camping as a kid. So J-A-F-F-L-E is if you want to Google and kind of see the fun history, originally the South Africans and the Australians kind of fight as to who really owns it. But I think the original patent comes out as being Australian. So we've taken this concept. We used to have them as kids putting stuffed like leftovers or canned food between two pieces of bread, and then you put it in this special Jaffle iron, and then you close it, you seal that off, and then you cut the crust off, and then you toast it on the grill. So for me, having a background as a private chef for over 20 years, I thought, well, why not take my experience as a chef and put all my travels of being around, working on super yachts around the world and learning different cuisines, put that into my roots, which is a pocket sandwich. And we didn't know we had a frozen product when we launched it, but that's clearly what we've gone to market with now.
That answers what my next question was going to be. Was this the goal all along, to be in major grocery stores across the country?
No, I don't think we really realized what we had when we started. We literally started 3 years ago in the Park Silly Sunday market. And I think the traction that we got that first summer and the buildup and just playing around with different flavors, we knew we had something, but it was the construction workers across the street that really gave me the idea of being able to provide them a lunch that was different. I didn't want to have a restaurant. I didn't want to serve pizza or burgers or anything that wasn't clean and natural, which was really the foundation of my brand as a chef, was being able to cook healthy global cuisine. So when we launched Jaffles, it was really important for me to stay true to my core values, which is cooking clean food. And so throughout the process of the product development phase for Jaffles, we took our time to really find SKUs and flavors that America wanted. And we thought, well, if America wants mac and cheese, we're going to give them a better for you version of it. Or, whether it's an ethnic flavor like a vegan Indian curry, we just played around with different flavors. And today our sloppy Joe, our beef sloppy Joe is one of our top sellers. But all the ingredients that we use, everything is made from scratch in small batches. But it's the nutritionals that we're proud of. So no antibiotics, no hormones, and no nitrates.
In some ways, it's sad that here we have a world-class chef launching a new product, and the number one selling SKU, is Sloppy Joe's. That's funny, because that was kind of the start of the Jaffles, or what I would call campfire sandwiches, uh-huh. when I was a kid. 2018 is really going to be the year that you guys hit the accelerator and go for some growth. How many locations nationwide do you have relationships with at this point?
Oh, how many doors are we in right now in terms of grocery stores?
Right.
We're in about 250 grocery stores right now, but we'll add 500 to that next year. So Mariano's in Chicago was a big breakthrough for us, because that was the validation where, I know it sounds strange, but when you're in Utah and you go into Harmon's and you meet with the buyers, they're all amazing accounts, and we feel, really privileged to be on the shelf everywhere pretty much now in Utah, even Whole Foods. So Whole Foods for us was a great breakthrough because everybody knows how strict it is to get into that system. And we were part of the opening as well. So you guys can try them out on the hot deck over there. But so 500 will be added to the list next year. HEB is a big one of those. So frozen category gets set twice a year. So the rollout will be in the spring. So we closed all these accounts now, and it takes about 4 to 6 months to physically hit the shelf.
So Meryl, we're a business show. Walk our audience through, what is it like working with these grocery stores? We've all heard it's brutally competitive. Mm-hmm. What does it take to get a relationship like that? Do you have to pay shelving fees? Mm-hmm. Do you have to give them free product? I've heard you're going to have a very expensive 12 months in front of you. It's going to mm-hmm. take a lot of cash. Share with our audience why that's the case.
Yeah. Several sides of it. Yes, there are still major retailers that require and demand what they call slotting fees. So we started out with 11 SKUs, but we went to market with 8 because you have to pay and roughly, you know, could be $1,000, $1,200 per SKU per store, right? So for example, for Kroger, we actually managed to get an exemption because I'm a majority female-owned business. So we managed to save about, you know, over $250,000 just in slotting fees with one retailer. So it does get very, very expensive. If they don't have slotting fees, they have what they call one free case. But that all adds up. So very, very expensive to break into the market. And then you also have to do demos. And you can do demos locally, which is great. But when you're out of state, we're busy doing demos in Central Market in Texas and in Marianas in Chicago and Illinois. You have to pay these demo companies to essentially prepare the product, cook it up, cut it into sample sizes so people can try it because it's a new product. People don't know what it is. So for us, that's where a lot of our investment goes to, is to educate the consumer what a Jaffel is.
And are you manufacturing everything here?
We are. That's kind of the interesting thing is we started out with, I don't know, some people may remember the tiny little restaurant that we had. We only had that open for 6 months while we were going through our USDA certification process. And then what we've done recently over the summer is actually rip out the restaurant, which is now a giant walk-in freezer. We've also increased our production levels using the same facility, the same staffing. We've got a packing room. Everything is monitored by a daily inspector that comes on site. And we can produce, instead of 1,000 to 1,200 Jaffels a day, we're now going to be cooking 1,000 an hour.
Wow. Mm-hmm. We've got to leave it there. What a great success story. Congratulations to you. That's Meryl Vandermeerwe mm-hmm. with Jaffels.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
Thanks
you
for being
so
here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Doug, we've got just a little bit of time left. I think we should start by thanking our sponsors.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. We do want to thank our sponsors. We couldn't do a show like this without our sponsors, and they include the Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, Vicasa and McDonough, Park City Mountain, Park City Chamber Bureau, and Columbus Pacific Properties with Viridian Apex Residences.
And welcome to Vicasa for being part of that group this week.
That is a new group, and I guess we're officially completely sold out of underwriting, which is awesome. Thank you to Emily here at KPCW for doing that for us.
Emily Elliott, she's a rock star. Thank you to all of our sponsors, and thank you to our fabulous guests. We started the hour with Claudia Chan, the author of This Is How We Rise, How to Reach Your Highest Potential, Empower Women, and Lead Change in the World. Then we had Justin Hunter and Michelle Larson with Park City Sink Float. They're having a big open house at their location this Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. Go to sinkfloat.com, sinkfloat.com. And then last but certainly not least, Meryl Vandermeerwe with Jaffels. They're expanding nationwide. Lots of great things happening with that business that started right here at the Park City Silly Market. Lots of great stories coming out of that market. Want to thank you for listening to Mountain Money. You can always go to kpcw.org to listen to any of our past shows, including this one. Thank you for being with us. Have a great day.